Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You don't want to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
All right, welcome into the Hoist the Colors podcast on this Monday. It is April 15th. We are 2 days removed from ECU's annual spring game. I'm Steven Igo, the host of the podcast. My co-host today is Sean. He is known as Nova Pirate on Hoist the Colors, Northern Virginia Pirate, because of his background there and obviously where he's located, but has a coaching background, one of our favorite posters, one of our favorite guests to talk football. Fans always love hearing from you, Sean, and we finally have some football, some live football to talk about again. So welcome back.
Yeah, thanks, Stephen, for having me. I always enjoy talking football with you and then sharing whatever thoughts we have with the message board. So I appreciate you having me.
Absolutely, man. And I always enjoy the text I get in game. And it was challenging on Saturday. You had a lot of good thoughts, and I was trying to, you know, there's no broadcast to go back and rewatch, so we were trying to do live updates and keep track of it. But lots of good thoughts we can share today, man. And we can get more into the specifics, Sean. But I thought that, like, from a best case scenario standpoint, weather, turnout, atmosphere, offense looking pretty sharp, quarterbacks, like I think it really couldn't have gone much better. Just what was kind of your overall talk on the spring game?
Yeah, I was shocked at the amount of people that were in the stadium and pleasantly surprised. I mean, it's clear that there are some buzz with Coach Baker coming in and the implementation of the new offense. So I think that's great for Pirate football, but it was also good for the kids. I mean, you're grinding it out all spring, and to have people there supporting you is a real boost as an athlete and as a coach. I mean, they're all human beings, and it also, I think the more people that are there, they tend to step it up a bit. So it was good to see. At first I thought, is there a concert going on, or are they here for the baseball game? And I mean, I kind of had a hard time finding a seat. I got there like 15 minutes before the game started. So pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. And you've probably been going to more spring games than me, you know, dating back, Sean. Do you remember a spring game crowd that big?
I don't. The biggest one that I remember before this one was Ruff's first season. And he rolled out kind of like a rock star, and people were just excited to see him. That was the second biggest crowd that I've seen. This one was bigger than that one, and probably by quite a few people. It also says that people are engaged with this.
Yes.
Football is one of those sports that people cannot get enough of. It's the storyline, the narrative, the players, the drama. You know, there's a reason why the NFL is a multi-billion dollar industry, and probably college football, if it goes that way as well, could probably earn close to that, probably does. So people are intrigued, I think.
I always get the question, Sean, why are you covering spring practice over an ECU baseball game? Look, I love covering baseball. I'm a baseball guy, but and there's no one really out there outside of the spring game. So like we provide value of what's happening in a practice, who's looking good. And at the end of the day, it's still spring practice, but we get a ton of subscriptions and interest off spring practice coverage because no one else is doing it. And this offseason has been extremely engaging after the transfer portal season. And after a 2-10 season, that says a lot. Pirate fans are always hungry for info. They always want to know what's going on. So let's go before we get to the quarterbacks, and we'll start kind of broad base with the offense. Sean, you know, new offensive coordinator John David Baker coming in. I know we were both very excited about the hire based upon what he did at Ole Miss or what he was involved with there. So getting the chance to at least watch a watered-down version of it on Saturday, because they probably didn't show everything, with it being open to the public, what were your takeaways from the offense?
I was impressed at how much he has been able to implement in such a short amount of time. And it's, you've got two challenges coming in as a new person. One, you've got to understand the culture, and two, you have to have buy-in from the players. I'm going to add a third to that. You have to have a green light from the head coach. So coming in, I think he's done. So here's how I'll grade him. For up until the spring game, I'm going to give him an A for implementation, for reading the culture, and for basically Mike Houston stepping out of the way. So I was pleasantly surprised at the tempo. I mean, how quickly he's been able to change the tempo. It was a very base offense. I was a little surprised at how base it was, but given that you don't know who's going to be at the game from other teams, and but there was enough of a change from last year's offense for me to say, okay, this is a completely different game, and he's been able to sort of install probably all the key components that he wants to now. And the third thing that struck me, Stephen, is that, I mean, there seemed to be buy-in from the offense, from the receivers to the offensive line. I mean, there was excitement in a way that I haven't seen excitement at a spring game among the players. I mean, last year, to be honest, it just felt like everybody was going through the motions. We had two quarterbacks that you kind of would hold your breath wondering, are they going to be able to make a completion in rhythm? None of that played out. So just a lot of sort of good vibes at the spring game, right? The spring game is not the season, but it's a good start.
No doubt. Much better than last year, which I want to hit on as far as quarterback play and upside. And yeah, John David Baker, I think he told the pregame show on 94.3 The Game that basically on a scale of 1 to 10, it was going to be about 3 or 4 on the vanilla scale. So that kind of gives you an idea of how watered down it was. And there were several different plays I saw in scrimmage 1 and 2 that we did not see in scrimmage 3, which, you know, was open to the public. So, all right, quarterbacks, Caden Hauser, Raheem Jeter was working with basically the twos and threes in the fourth quarter. It was basically Caden Hauser and Jake Garcia that played through the first three quarters. Hauser started on purple, played the first half on purple, and then Garcia was with gold. They did flip-flop after halftime, basically I think through the third quarter, maybe through one drive in the fourth quarter. I can't remember the exact scenario. But either way, both guys had their moments. They started on fire. What did you make of Caden Hauser, Jake Garcia, your first time watching them in a Pirate uniform?
One of the things I had posted was they both have lots of elements that make them elite or borderline elite. And at times they showed that on the field. Both were making really good throws. All the throws that this offense requires, deep outs, they were making. A big part of this offense often involves clearing out the receivers and verticals and then bringing in the inside receiver or tight end on a sort of about a 10 or 15 yard dig route. So they were making all of the throws across the middle. So when they were on, it was fun to watch. And the other thing, the other big difference in a really good quarterback versus a quarterback that's struggling at this level is neither one of these QBs waited for the players, for the wide receivers to be open. A big part of this offense involves timing and throwing the ball before the receiver is open. And you saw that happen. I mean, they wasted very little time in getting the ball out. And their technique, I thought, was really, really good at the beginning of the game. And they were both quarterbacks have a zip on the ball and place the ball in tight spots at times. So that's part of the elite game that we haven't seen here in quite a while. And when it works, it's a beautiful thing to watch unfold. And it's also really difficult when you've got a quarterback like both of them that can make the necessary throws across the field. As a defender, it's very frustrating because you can be in, you can have perfect coverage, and then you've got Hauser or Garcia making a beautiful throw to an outside shoulder. And so impressed with the mechanics at the beginning of the scrimmage, and then just ball placement, and then just understanding what the offense was, what they were trying to do with the route trees.
I thought the accuracy this spring, especially from QB1, look, it was a quarterback competition last year, but it was really Mason Garcia was the one. He was working with the ones all year. And there would be days he looked great. There would be days that he would, kind of inexplicably spike the ball in the dirt or just have an errant throw every handful of passes. And we just have not seen that this spring. And then, Flynn, who was more accurate, did not have the arm strength or mobility, I think, that these guys have. And, so Flynn would make some good throws, but he couldn't really throw maybe to the far hash. These guys can both do that. They both get the ball out quick. They both can throw those little sideline spit out passes as well, which is big in this offense. So I just feel like no matter who wins the competition, and we'll talk about that maybe in a second, ECU is just in a much better spot. And I wrote that in one of my VIP takeaways. Like, ECU is in a great spot at quarterback. You keep both these guys, I think whoever wins, ECU has a very capable quarterback on its hands. Your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think you described that perfectly, Stephen. I mean, we really have gone from famine to feast. And the zip that both of these guys have on their ball is also quite impressive. And to hear you say that there's been consistency in practice is also really, really good to hear. I'm not surprised on that, just looking at both of these guys' film. And at the end of the day, and this is true, especially in this offense, win or loss, the win total is almost always dictated by how well a QB can manipulate the system. So, I think with either one of these guys, we're in pretty good shape.
So when you watch them both I don't know. And this is not just coach speak. Like, I don't know if I can give the edge to really either guy right now based on what I've seen in practice and the scrimmages. Like, it's been pretty even. Garcia has honestly been better than I thought he'd be. Mm-hmm. That's taken nothing away from Hauser. Hauser's been very good. I just think Garcia, after not playing at all last year, I kind of had in my mind, all right, he's coming in. He probably won't win the job, but he'll compete for it well. I just think he's been better than I thought he'd be. And I think Hauser's been good too. And I think, they both do things well. They both can do things better. But as you watch both of them this past Saturday, like, is there an area that you identified that maybe one guy is a little bit better than the other in certain aspects?
Yeah, and I concur with everything that you just said. I was impressed with Garcia. I mean, if you look at his film, and again, you have to be careful with film study, but a lot of his film showed someone who was really good at their first progression. But once those progressions broke down, his accuracy and his ability to get the ball in the right placement began to deteriorate as well. Also on his film, he looked much less mobile than he was in the game on Saturday. So I came away impressed with his ability to make a few more progressions than his film showed. And he's got some wheels. I was surprised at times to see him making sort of the runs that he was making with the speed that he was making. So, watching both of them, Stephen, I was thinking, like, okay, this is a rarity in ECU because you really have two QBs that if you want to talk about what it looks like when you take a kid when they're young and you put them in the best camps, you get them the best QB coaches, you find people to spend time with them. What you have are really two excellent QBs. I really liked Hauser as well. And I wrote that I thought if just coming off of the spring game, if you were going to give the nod to somebody, I would give it to Hauser. And it's not that I thought Hauser was significantly more accurate than Garcia. And so, first of all, I think either one of them can run this offense well. The thing that I liked about Hauser in the spring game was his ability to make plays with his feet. And when he was sort of in crunch time. And I think there was something there that gave him a little bit more of an edge. His playmaking ability, I thought, was just a tad better than Garcia's, because this is an offense that really, I think Garcia said this during his interview, this really is basketball on so many levels on the field. And as a point guard, you've got to be able to, as the QB's point guard here, you've got to be able to improvise. And I think Hauser did just a little bit better improvising, but just a tiny bit better. And I thought he was just a little quicker than Garcia. So if that's kind of what I thought, just a tiny better playmaker, because there's so many options in this offense, even. I mean, really from the RPO to whether or not you're going to, you know, flare out with a pass to a quarter to the inside receiver or go. I mean, the options here are expansive. And so I just thought Hauser did just a tiny bit better with that, but not much.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things you hear after spring ball or when there's a quarterback battle, hey, the guys are neck and neck. And a lot of it is lip service. Like, last year, we kept hearing about the battle, and I think in reality, they were trying to keep Alex Flynn on the roster as a backup plan in case things didn't go well with Mason. And we were both – I don't know how much we talked about it on the air versus behind the scenes. I think a little bit of both, but we were both a little concerned based on Mason and the lack of progression, you know, year over year after last year's spring game. And I don't really have those concerns now. I'm not going to say that Hauser or Garcia are going to be – you know, first team all conference quarterbacks, but it's a definite upgrade. And but I also think the offensive change and having more playmakers around them has a lot to do with that as well. We'll hit on this and then we'll move on from the quarterbacks. So the portal window does open Tuesday at April 16th. It goes for 2 weeks. You know, I don't get the sense either quarterback's looking to leave. I think both guys are confident they can win the job. And I think that's a good thing, because it should keep them both on the roster. And going into the fall, my question is, Sean, when's the ideal time to name a starter in preseason camp? Because I don't think we want to get into the situation where last year, you know, you got Mason for two series in the season opener, and then it's Flynn, and then it was back and forth the whole year. So, you know, I do think it's important to name a guy and to give that guy every chance. So when do you think that time is optimal to happen?
I mean, to me, the sooner the better, and I would have it named before fall camp. I don't know if Coach Eason is going to do that, but the problem right now, Stephen, is we're running against the clock here, and this is one of those offenses that it has a very complex side to it, but it also has a simple side. The simple side is what Briles, who's kind of the brainchild of this to some degree, and then Kiffin, they've taken very simple concepts and they've thrown them together in this like weird sort of strategic soup. And so as a QB, because you really are playing quarterback, once that ball is snapped, there's so many different options that the QB can sort of tag. The more practice, the better. The more muscle memory, the better. Well, it really, you need time in this. And so I think splitting reps is not helpful for either one of them. So ideally, you name them as quickly as you can.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, really the picks on Saturday, Sean, were due to timing and, you know, miscommunication with the receivers, which goes back to, you know, reps with the same guys or lack thereof. So I think, you know, I don't see a scenario where he names a starter going into camp just based for a competition factor. I do agree that would be optimal. I think if you go, you know, once you get through that first or second scrimmage in camp and you're at minimum 2 weeks out, I think that's when you got to name a guy, because then you get 2 weeks of full practice, one more live scrimmage. If you're not naming a guy by then I'm a little worried, not that neither guy can get the job done, but just that the offense is not going to have enough continuity for the start of the season. So we'll see. I mean, that's definitely the toughest decision that Mike Houston has to make is, all right, who's going to be the guy, and then when do we name him? So that'll be interesting.
And then how do you keep the other person happy? I mean, right. And because it is so close, and I agree, they're not going to do this before fall camp starts. I just think this is really the more time you have in this system, the better. This is not sort of a simple 10-15 play playbook. Again, on the surface, the playbook is not that complicated. It's just when the ball is snapped, there's so many things happening that the more time, the better. And I do think, like, towards the end of the game, what you saw really was a breakdown in both sort of concentration levels of the quarterback, but also when you're mixing and matching receivers, it's hard to have the continuity because there's so much misdirection in this offense. You really do need as much consistency as you can get. Otherwise, the beauty and the complexity and the strategy of this game, of this offense, breaks down. At the end of the day, Steven, this is an offense that basically says, we're going to get our kids into space. And we're going to do that by, if we have to, we're going to do that by misdirection. If we have to, we're going to do that with man to man. Or, you know, we don't care how we're going to do it, but we're going to get our best kids in space. And the quarterback has to sort of be on page with that as well.
Yeah, and I thought one of the biggest improvements year over year, Sean, was the vertical passing game. You know, we just didn't see any of that last offseason a whole lot outside of maybe the occasional Josiah Hatfield bomb in practice. You know, we saw Anthony Smith, the NC State transfer, make plays. We saw Makeup Blake make some plays down the field. We saw Brock Spalding have a nice catch and run. So what did you think about the receiver position on Saturday?
Again, we've gone from kind of famine to feast. I think sometimes when you get transfers in from the portal, you don't know what you're getting. The recruiting process for these kids, I think, has been excellent. Watching Wright, watching Omega, it was really impressive. I mean, both of them were giving double moves to D-backs. I don't remember many of our receivers with the ability to have the complexity of the double moves that they were doing on Saturday. The speed, the ability to run the routes with accuracy, it's another level of football that we've not had. So we've got some real weapons now in space that we really haven't had in a while. And to be honest, Steven, our offense really wasn't set up to put players in space the last couple of years. I mean, they said that it was, but there still was this mentality that we're going to run this play, whether or not you're ready for it, and we're going to do it with brute force. And, you know, we're going to see whose man is the strongest. And more times than not, we didn't win the battles. I mean, this offense basically says, look, if you've got too many people in the box, we're going to throw the ball. If you don't have enough people in the box, we're going to run the ball. I mean, we're not going to just sort of do something because we're going to try to impose our will on you. We're going to run this offense to put people in space, and we're going to do it in the best way that we can. Even if it means like running people in all kinds of, even if it's a three alarm fire, we're going to do it, right? Like, the rules here is there are no rules. We will do whatever it takes to score. And the last thing too, Steven, the vertical game, these quarterbacks, both Hauser and Garcia, were throwing dimes at times, and they were throwing them in motion. They were not waiting for players to get open. They were running the wide receivers were running the routes as timing routes, and the quarterbacks were hitting them appropriately.
Yeah, guys hitting stride downfield. I mean, we just, whether they're open or not, I mean, we saw a ton of underthrows last year or overthrows, and these balls were on the money. So that was a great sign from the quarterbacks. All right, running back wise and tight end wise, both of those positions had notable players out. All right, so running back had Javius Bond, who practiced most of the spring but did not play in the spring game. Rajay Harris was out. That means we saw Kamaru Edmonds, Marlon Gunn, and the freshman TJ Engelman. We'll start there. Sean, what did you see out of the running back position?
Yeah, so if you look at the last 2 years at Ole Miss, and basically their run system rewards running backs that basically can take off on the second bounce, hit the hole, and run with balance. So I think we have two running backs that really fit that bill in Gunn and Edmonds. I think both of them can be rewarded in this system because there's really, you know, because this system really is not so much about stretching the offensive line and waiting for someone to kind of juke around a little bit before they find the right gap or hole they want to run through. This is an offense that basically hands the ball off to the back or the quarterback keeps it. But if they're going to hand it off to the back has to hit the hole and run. And Gunn, I believe, has that ability. And Edmonds does too. And I think they both really, you know, shown in that sort of aspect. I think Bond will do great because he's got speed, but we have two backs, I think, that really will benefit from this new system. That was my thought. I was pleasantly surprised that both of them sort of fit the bill. And both Gunn and Edmonds have really good balance and they have good vision. And that helps in this system. Again, if you look at the last, I think it was Quishon Edwards, who was at Ole Miss. I think he's transferred out. Like, he had a great season and has a body type very similar to both Gunn and Edmonds. But it's not just body type. It's the ability to, you know, really hit speed on that second bounce and then run and not worry about sort of, you know, hipping right or left. So I was pleasantly surprised with both of them.
How do you think, you know, Rajay, who looked dynamite in the Tulsa finale last year after kind of a, I don't want to say sluggish, but not his best year, and a lot of it had to do with the offensive line. How do you think Rajay fits in this offense when he gets back healthy in the fall?
I don't know, Steven, and I think he is a great player. His speed, I thought, tended to come in that third sort of bounce, not necessarily in the first or second. He tended to get faster, I think. He had a spurt, and then that's after the third step or so. So I don't know. I think the jury is still out for him in this system. So it will be interesting to see where he fits in. And it's also going to be interesting to see where Baker wants to put him. But I don't know, Steven. I think that's a little bit more of a question mark. Again, this is not to take away anything from his athleticism or what he's done for East Carolina, but I don't know what it's going to look like with the type of runner he is for this system. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just kind of a wait and see. All he's been able to do thus far is walkthroughs, but we know he'll get plenty of reps in preseason camp. Chase Braswell says Garcia looked dynamite. Omega Blake high pointed the ball. Super impressive. Yeah, that Omega Blake catch was really impressive. Kind of shows you his upside. Again, if you got a comment, Facebook, X, or YouTube, drop it. We'll get to it throughout the show. All right, so the most interesting thing I noticed watching all three scrimmages, Sean, was the usage of the tight end position. I think this was done strategically. A lot of throws of the tight end in scrimmage one and two, and that was also a lot of those plays were against the blitz. Blake Harrell blitzed, what, maybe three or four times Saturday. So I think we're going to see a lot of the tight end come regular season. And a lot of those on the RPO reads. What did you make of the tight end usage and also understanding that they were without Shane Calhoun, they were without Cyril Rouse, and they were without Antonio Ferguson? So, I mean, that's three tight ends scholarship-wise that did not play.
Yeah, so I definitely could tell they were limiting the use of the tight end because in some ways that's part of the X factor in this offense. Because the tight end really is used both as a traditional fullback for as an extra blocker, but also what they'll do is this offense likes to hide the tight end and make the tight end look like they're just going to be a regular H-back blocker, and then have the tight end run sort of a deep sort of post route when the linebacker is not ready for the tight end to come out, or the linebacker is sort of worried about the run. So they disguise the linebacker in this quite a bit, and in that disguising, it's really quite effective. So I thought there was such a limited use that it was kind of hard for me to kind of determine it. And it's good for you to hear that, because part of me was thinking, are they really going to not use the tight end like they did at Ole Miss? But it's good to hear that they used him much more. And look, I thought the times that they used him, and it was primarily, was it Kelly? Is that the transfer?
Kelly, yeah.
Yeah. And I thought that he, and my sense is they wanted him because the offense that he's coming from does some of the same things. I think he's going to be a good player. And the times that they used him in sort of flare outs, and there wasn't much disguising him though. So I don't know if I can sort of fully comment on the full use of the tight end here, just because I didn't think it was used as much as I thought it was going to. What did you think, Steven?
Yeah. I mean, I think we're going to see a lot more of it in the regular season. I think Shane Calhoun and Casey Kelly, they're kind of similar. They're both like 6'2", 6'3", and they're more stocky than – they're more built like H-backs than like big tight ends. So I feel like they're going to be heavily utilized in those packages, and in the RPO game, they're going to utilize a lot of the – you know, we saw Cincinnati do it a lot with Desmond Ridder, where they had the RPO – roll out, he could throw to the tight end as an option, or he could keep it, or he could hit the backside receiver. And I think we're going to see a lot of that. You know, we saw it at Ole Miss. I think we're going to see a lot of that in the regular season. So I didn't read too much into it, because I think it was intentionally hidden, and they got a lot of plays for the tight end, and they've got a lot of confidence in those guys too. We know Baker's a former tight ends coach. Jay says dropped at least 3 touchdowns Saturday, but we look better in the red zone. Yeah, after Hauser hit a big one, he hit Engelman out of the backfield, true freshman receiver. He dropped it. I think Winston Wright couldn't make the play on one.
Yeah,
and then there maybe was another, but you know, I won't say it's not as many drops as we saw in a game last year, and I think those guys will continue to get better, Sean.
Well, I think the other thing too, Steven, is they got very vanilla when they got into the red zone.
Yeah.
Typically, and again, if we're basing this off of Ole Miss's offense, the red zone is when some of the misdirection concepts of this offense tend to be used in full effect. So one of the things that I was looking for in the regular Ole Miss offense is what they'll do is they'll line up maybe trips on the left for the wide receivers, and then let's say they're on the 10-yard line, they'll bring out the wide receivers, and then they'll have 3 of them at the same time do some type of slant route. But the slant route really is to create almost they're called rub routes, but it's really a pick. They'll create a pick with the linebackers. So there's just all this confusion in the middle of the end zone. And then they'll flare out the running back, or they'll flare out the tight end, or they'll run the running back in orbit motion and then do more misdirection. So it was very vanilla, and that's the one thing that I've noticed as well. I was thinking, okay, they're obviously worried about someone picking up on some of their play. So I wasn't too terribly concerned about the lack of production. There was one time when I think it was Gunn who ran the wrong route when they were close to scoring. So, and that's the other thing too, Steven, as the game wore on, you did see wide receivers not running the right routes. And because these route trees are fairly complex, often, you know, you'll have one receiver that's really only doing the work, and the other 2 or 3 are basically setting up the one wide receiver to catch the ball, or so there's a complexity in the route tree that we haven't seen in the past. So there's a lot of moving parts here. So definitely the second half, there were some breakdowns because this is an offense that you really can't take a playoff. And I saw some confusion, which is understandable. They've not been in the offense long enough, but this is a system that's going to reward the offense for knowing the offense and for the quarterback to keep his head in the game and get into a flow like a great point guard. And I think we saw, which is understandable, we saw a little bit of sort of drop off in that. I don't think they know the offense well enough yet to kind of just react like you obviously at some point want them. That you can tell,
right,
some of them, they're still kind of going through the motions intellectually.
And I mean, they've only had 15 practices where they'll have what, 30, you know, before the start of the season. So that's certainly a factor as well. All right. So Pirate says, thoughts on the offensive line. I'll let you get into this. I know you spent some time specifically watching the O-line, and I do want to mention again, you know, very limited blitzing, stunning, you know, compared to what we normally see from a Blake Carroll defense. So I think that has to be factored in, but regardless, what were your thoughts on the O-line? And also, I do want to mention, too, Purple was basically the first-team offensive line the whole spring, and the Gold was essentially the second-team offensive line. So what did you make of the offensive line?
Yeah, so I came away definitely seeing some improvement. So let me just talk about the transfers first. And I paid more attention, I think, to Tarpe, Sapp, and Bell than anyone else. And I think all three can step in and either start or be plug-and-play players for us. So I think they've done a really good job of recruiting them. I think – I don't know if I'm saying his name right. Is it Jason Tarpe or
– Yeah, I think it is Tarpe.
Yeah. So very impressed with his ability to play tackle, and I think he could sub in for more or even play the other side. So I think we have another viable tackle in Tarpe between he, Poku, and Moore. I think we're okay. And then on the interior, I thought that between Poku and Engelman, at times they were fairly, I don't want to say dominant force, but they were a force in the running game. I thought that they had some really, really nice sort of push blocks, and that they were able to push off the D-line at times. So I came away more encouraged than I was last year. Look, this is an offense that still is going to use concepts like inside zone and outside zone. I don't want to leave the impression that those two basic runs are not going to be a part of this. They will. We're not going to see them as much. And I think what I was most encouraged in is I think both of those players have gotten stronger. I think they both seem to know their position better. And then again, with the transfers, I think all three seemed strong enough for this league. I think for Bell at times and Sapp, I think they were struggling with the pin and pull concept. Actually, I think they all the line was struggling a little bit. So when we had the most success, we base in the run game, we were using sort of gap runs where we primarily we were running what's called a dart. We had most success out of a dart play, which is basically when the tackle pulls and the tackle goes in around and looks for someone to hit in the B or C gap. So when we had the tackle pull, we did really well, and I think it confused the defense. And when we did simple inside zone and outside zone, I saw some of what we were seeing last year, but not quite at the level that we were seeing it. So I think the gap game is going to really work for us. But I also think that inside zone and outside zone are going to be somewhat works in progress, similar to not quite as bad as last year, because I did see some improvement.
All right. Jonathan Pollock says, is there any concern we only scored 11 more points this year offensively than last year, or is the litmus test as a spring game not a good measure? So I don't know what the scoreboard said. I just know the eye test, especially in terms of explosive plays. And look, the one thing about this offense, Sean, is especially early on, and you've mentioned this in your write-ups, like there are a lot of moving parts. And like you said, it almost has to be kind of second nature for it to be clicking on all cylinders all game. It's going to be tough for ECU to reach that early in the season. I do think the explosive potential we've seen and the quarterback talent we've seen and the hurry-up offense, all those factors are upgrades from last year. The hurry-up offense, I think, is going to do a better job of keeping the defense on its heels and therefore allowing the offensive line to maybe play more to its strengths instead of being attacked or on its heels. And the other thing I want to mention is, look, when it looks good, it looks really good. And when it looks bad and they get off track or off, you know, second and long instead of second and medium, it can look bad. But as Brett Hickman said, and I wrote one time, it's feast or famine right now. He said, I'd rather it be feast than famine instead of starving on every play. So your thoughts on that? I still think it's a major upgrade from last year, even though it's not going to be all sunshine and rainbows.
No, I think you did a great analysis there, Stephen. I wasn't particularly worried about the score. I was paying attention to what concepts they were able to bring over from Ole Miss and sort of the ability of the receivers to connect with the quarterback and how well the quarterback and line were working together. Look, what is going to help, and I think that's an excellent point that you make in terms of when it looks bad, it's going to look bad, because this is an offense that is designed to keep the defense off guard. So the defense has certain rules that they have to follow. And basically, this offense is designed to sort of punish over-aggressiveness on the defensive line and the linebackers. So what you will see with the offensive line is, let's say there's a you know, just a simple deep out on the play side. And what this offense is designed to do is the offensive line will block to the field side to make it look like there's going to be some type of run to the field side. And the whole line will shift over, allowing the QB to be able to roll out and not have many people in front of him. So there's so much deception and misdirection with this offensive concept that I'm not worried about the amount of points just because there's a lot of moving parts to it. Look, if we're still scoring 11 points or if we're not scoring very well midway through the season, then yeah, I will be. But right now, I was just interested in to see which pieces were being put together and came away pleasantly surprised. And as Steven said, there's a tempo here that by itself is going to put defenses on – you know, it's gonna challenge defenses. And the last thing I'll say about this too, Stephen, is this is an offense that's designed really to kind of force the linebackers, right? We know the linebackers are really kind of in charge of making sure any sort of mid-range passes, or it's their job to make the tackles. It's an offense designed to make the linebackers pick each play, what are they going to concentrate on? Am I going to concentrate on the run, or am I going to concentrate on the pass? And the quarterback in his pre-snap read, the pre-snap read in this system is for the quarterback first to read the inside backer to see in his what his position is. And his second read, pre-snap read, is to look at the outside linebacker and then to count how many people are in the box. You know, am I going to run or am I going to throw it? And where's the linebacker? So, when it works, it is really kind of fascinating to see. But yeah, when it doesn't, it's a car pileup.
There's no doubt. Jay says the quarterbacks have alternated between ones and twos. How has that affected who looked better at times? So I'll handle this because I've been at the majority of practices. I mean, you know, for the most part. Oh, Siri's chiming in. For the most part, you know, the guy who has been with the ones, given the offensive line, to me, there's a, you know, the first team offensive line is pretty good right now. The second team, they've mixed and matched personnel there. There's a little bit of a drop off. I would say the guy who's with the ones has looked better more consistently, and that's why they're kind of even, because neither guy has been able to go out and dominate consistently with the twos. And it's been more whoever's with the ones looks better. But they both had plays with the twos. Like Garcia was with the two offensive line Saturday, but he also had Chase Sowell at receiver and Keelan Robinson, who had a great spring as well. Yeah. And then you had Hauser with the first team offensive line and then with the transfer receiver. So he was with newer receivers and not as explosive at running backs either. So they've alternated. I think they've both looked good at times, but neither has been able to really separate. And that's why we're in this competition. All right, Sean, we've had a lot of discussion about the offense. Let's talk about some defense. And again, Savon Revel, big piece of the secondary. He missed this spring due to, groin surgery to get a sports hernia fixed. So he'll be back for the fall. Trying to think who else. We saw Elijah Morris and Deontay Johnson play, but not a lot on Saturday because, you know, why risk it? Outside of that, I don't think anybody too notable missed the spring. So what did you make of the defensive performance overall on Saturday?
Yeah, I thought once they settled in and really began to force the offense to beat them and not beat themselves, I thought we saw a lot of what coincided with last year, which is a really stout defensive line that knows all of its or most of its gap or its run fits. I thought Carr looked really good. I thought Lampley looked really strong and Johnson. I mean, these guys are back, it looks to me. I thought the linebackers, you know, it's interesting. I was thinking about this the other day. The linebacker as this 6 foot kind of like stout middle linebacker that's, kind of making all of these grunts and, you know, putting their head in the middle of the offensive line, that's kind of gone. As a linebacker now, you've got to be able to cover the pass. You've got to be quick enough to get around the edge. And in terms of athleticism, I think we have, you know, a few really good linebackers that can really start in this league and show that. I think once we get past the first couple of starters, it doesn't look quite as good. And then once we get back into the secondary, and you and I have talked a little bit about this, my biggest concern is just the secondary and some of the safety play. This is a league that can be heavy on sort of air raid concepts and, at times I thought the safeties looked out of place. At times I thought they looked a bit unsure of where they were supposed to be position wise. So I think we need more work back on that end. And you're right. When we have some of the players back, it will have a shutdown corner, which will help a lot. So I think it's strength, defensive line, linebackers are good. And then secondary need some work, and then safeties, I think, are the biggest question mark for me. What do you think, Steven?
Yeah, replacing Julius Wood is the biggest question I have for this defense, because he just – there were times he wasn't great in coverage, but, I mean, he was the heartbeat of the secondary, and you don't really have that guy on the back end right now. Like, I think Omar Rogers is solid. I think Jordan Huff and Dontavius Nash are solid, but – I don't, replacing an all-conference safety, ECU does not have too many all-conference safeties, so that's a question mark for me. Plus, you got, Magazoo coming in, who I think is going to be a really good coach. He's learning this defense, so you expect some of those things. I do think Savon getting back will be huge, because then you can kind of really leave him on an island, and I'm not sure you can do that with the corners now, though I do want to point out, a couple of standouts. Isaiah Brown-Murray has made a huge jump. And I think that's crucial, because then when you get Savon back and Isaiah Brown-Murray, you look good. I am a little worried about the corner depth after that. Andrew Wilson-Lamp, the West Virginia transfer, he got beat pretty good by Anthony Smith, so he's got to clean up his technique. Daylon Disson is a redshirt freshman. I think he's going to be good, but he's still growing, still got to develop. So I wouldn't mind seeing them add another corner in the portal. And then I do want to point out, Raheem Craig, Louisville transfer, looked great off the edge. Yes. Did you have any other standouts or anything to add defensively?
No, I agree about Craig. I was pleasantly surprised with his speed. And, oh, do you know who I think always has a great spring, and I think he had another good spring if he can stay healthy? Is his first name Elijah Robertson? I think that's who it is. The kid who transferred 2 years ago
from Michigan State.
Yeah,
is it Josiah Robinson?
Yeah. Yes, I thought he 55. Yeah, I thought he looked good. He's got the length.
He's just always had trouble staying healthy.
Yeah, if he can stay healthy, I mean, he has all the tools. And I specifically wrote him down because I thought he had, I thought he had a really good game. But can he stay healthy? I mean, if he can stay healthy, I think we've got two fairly good potential sort of edge rushers when we need them. I mean, that's been our issue, right? Is the inability to really get to the quarterback. And in this game, if you cannot get to the QB, I mean, you're in trouble, right? Because the game is designed for sort of big plays, and the team that has the most big plays typically wins. And so that's been a struggle of ours the last couple of years.
No doubt. I did forget Chad Stevens did not play. He's another, you know, 6-year senior, so he's a guy off the edge. I thought Lampley looked really good, though. He slimmed down considerably, and he's become more of a pass rusher than a run stopper. But I think, again, that's not a bad thing given the defensive personnel. Yeah. I feel like this defense has a chance to be good like last year. I do want to caution some fans because I feel like it'll be maybe tough to reach last year's numbers, Sean, because with the up-tempo offense, you're going to have more – plays, so that is a drawback. And I also think you're going to be in higher scoring games, so teams may open it up a little more. Last year they probably just didn't want to turn it over because ECU couldn't get a first down at times. So but I still think this defense, we know they're going to be able to stop the run more than likely, and then if they can get consistent secondary play, I think it should be a pretty solid unit.
Yeah, I do too. Look, the safety position is huge, and I know a lot of fans maybe just looked at the linebackers or the defensive tackle, but the safety in the modern game is an extremely important component, and not having Woods this year, that's going to be a big loss because the safety really is in many ways is sort of the point guard for the defense. And that is a big sort of missing component. And to me, if we don't find someone that can at least step up to some level that he was in, I think we're going to struggle more. I mean, all the other components are there, but we've really got to find a safety that can fill some of those shoes that he had. It's a really important position, a very important position.
Special teams. We saw Andrew Conrad. I think he made all of his kicks, which was good because he struggled to start the spring. I think he missed like 2 or 3 field goals over the first scrimmage or two. Luke Larson, look, I still want to see them add a punter, but he kicked the ball well on Saturday. They didn't show any special teams formations, which is common in these scrimmages, especially with a new coordinator. So, I don't know. I mean, Winston Wright coming in, Javius Bond, you should have a pretty good return man there. Wright was an All-American returner or All-Conference returner at West Virginia. So, I feel good about the special teams outside of the punting game. I still want to see them at least bring in competition for Larson. But what do you make, or if anything, of the special teams on Saturday?
You know, I'm still holding my breath whenever we're kicking the ball. So, and even in the spring game, I don't know if it's my muscle memory, but look, I was pleased that it looked better, but also kind of low pressure, right? Yeah. And I think in the kicking game, more than anything else, it's a head game. And I think that's where we have struggled. I think both kids have certainly a skill set that is – I think they both have good skill sets. I think Luke can at times do some things that I'm not quite sure I get at times, and probably Coach Houston isn't quite sure either. But I thought he had some really nice punts. I'll take whatever sort of positives we can get. Because, look, I mean – special teams is so important. And the last thing we want to be doing next year is sort of talking about losses because we didn't have enough field goals, or the field goal was wide left too many times, or the punting was inconsistent. I think we tend to lose sight of how important that part of the game is. So, I think I would love for us to really kind of recruit a proven kicker, but every team is looking for them. And it's not that we don't have a good one. I think often it's the head part of it, the mental part.
Yeah, special teams lost ECU the chance at a 10-win season in 2022. And I think it'll always make Pirate fans a little uneasy, just at least in the near future because of that. All right, we've gone an hour just about. We've talked about a little bit of everything. Any final notes? I know you were taking some notes during the game, Sean, or any closing remarks on just the scrimmage or anything about the upcoming season you'd like to add?
Yeah, so we now have legitimate playmakers, I believe, on the offensive side of the ball in a way that we did not have last year. You look at the wide receivers that we have with Blake and Wright, and I thought Sowell did really good. Robinson had a good game. I mean, we've got five, I think we've got five receivers at least that can really hurt the defense if they're not on their sort of A game. So we have legitimate athletes that can catch the ball and run routes. We have two quarterbacks that have the potential to be excellent quarterbacks here and really sort of game changers, which we did not have last year. We have an O-line that looks to, at least in the spring game, to have improved incrementally. And I think with the gap game or the pool game should do even better. So I'm encouraged. I don't know how many wins we're going to have, but I do think that, and the tempo piece. So I think based on where we were last year and where we are now, it's been a remarkable sort of shift. And I'll give Coach Houston credit for allowing himself to pivot. To me, it's clear Baker is aggressive in his sort of culture change. And I think for the first time since Ruff and Lincoln were here, we have an offense that can really complement a good defense. I'm not sort of holding my breath at the beginning of the season thinking the defense has got to win every game. I don't know how long it's going to take for the offense to put things together, but if they can put it together, we've got athletes that can really, really make it difficult on the defenses that we're going to play next year to contain them. So I'm cautiously optimistic, but I think we're going to have to wait and see how all this is going to play together. But we certainly have players now that we didn't have last year.
I think that's the biggest thing I take away is the pieces are there. Last year I was concerned about the talent level, you know, of the top end players on the roster, especially offensively, and it unfortunately showed out. And this year the ceiling has been raised offensively. And the floor is at a high point, I think, defensively. So a lot of it comes down to how quickly the offense comes together. The schedule is favorable, but also, you know, there are not many guaranteed wins, but there's no game on the schedule that you're like, that's a definite loss. So, you know, somebody asked me earlier today what the ceiling and floor was. I said the ceiling was 10-2, the floor is 4-8, and that's a big discrepancy given all the unknowns, though. I think it's fair, and I think they could win a lot of games with the schedule if it all comes together. But there's just – the college sports are crazy, man. Like, there are other teams out there, Sean, that are probably looking at their schedule counting ECU as a win because they think ECU is the same 2-win team they played last year. We're probably doing the same looking at, you know, Temple or Navy or whoever. So it's just a crapshoot. But I do think ECU is in a much better position now, and I think you hit it. Coach Houston has made the necessary changes to give ECU the chance – to take that step, and now we just see how it kind of evolves over the rest of the summer.
Yeah, so. I concur.
All right, Sean. Well, this has been fun, man. Everybody, we got 265 viewers right now, so people tuned in. Appreciate everybody for watching. We'll do another podcast at some point, Sean, this offseason as we get closer to preseason camp. But appreciate your time as always. For Sean, I'm Steven Igo. This has been the Hoist the Colors podcast. We will talk to you next time.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.